Hello and welcome to the Payments Journal podcast. Today's discussion will be highly informative for banks, fintechs, and technology service providers focused on bank modernization, banking as a service, and in particular, the intersection with cloud and being cloud ready and moving applications modularly into the cloud. We're joined today by Lance Homer, Global Head of Digital Payments and Banking Ecosystems at Equinix, as well as Mercator Advisor Group's own Director of Debit and Alternative Payments, Sarah Grotta. Quick note, data and insights from today's discussion are available to download in an Equinix white paper titled The Future Role of Banks, available with the accompanying article that goes with this podcast. Without further ado, let's take it to the show.
So Lance, you work with a lot of banks going through modernization efforts. From your view of the projects that you're working on, what makes a bank a better bank, or how do you build a better bank?
Ryan, that's a great question, and obviously that's why we're here today to talk about this. I just want to, first off, thank you for having me back on the podcast, and it's great to be here with Sarah. So look forward to kind of us talking about what it takes to build a better bank. At Equinix, in my role as the global head of Equinix's digital payments and banking ecosystem, I think a lot about what makes a bank a better bank. And for me, I've narrowed it down to a few adjectives. A better bank is greener, connected, smarter, hybrid cloud, modular, distributed, and automated. And what we're seeing is that those are the things that are driving digital transformation across the landscape. We have about 350 banking customers inside of Equinix that come to Equinix to connect to their partners. And what we're seeing is that these banks are moving out of their legacy data centers so they can connect to their partners that may be in the cloud or build some of their own infrastructure in the cloud. And when it comes down to it, you know, teasing out some of these things, you know, most of these banks have ESG goals. So we talk about being a better bank as a greener bank. That means requiring them to move to renewables, reduce their carbon footprint, get to data centers that have a lower PUE, which is a measurement of power efficiency. And we're seeing them exit their data centers that may not have renewables carbon footprint, moving to a co-location like Equinix or a cloud provider who can offer them better green options. And then really the connected bank, we're seeing that banks are breaking up their technology stack and leveraging a bunch of new partners. And it's really, they're moving towards a platform model where they want customers and fintechs to all be connected ubiquitously and to have a better end user experience. Now, it's difficult to differentiate banks now on many of the things that they used to differentiate on interest rates and things of that nature. So banks are looking to be smarter, create a better end user experience by making the end user have a personalized experience, but also be smarter on how they manage things on the back office. And so we're seeing a lot of use of AI and ML being integrated into the technology stack. Talked a little bit about hybrid cloud. Certainly we're seeing kind of the better bank is one that is embracing those two things in a way that leverages the benefits of each. And I think we probably can dig into that a little bit more, what that means, but really, banks are not going to have all of their applications cloud ready, and they need a solution to bridge that gap. And a modular bank, you know, historically banks have been built on this very monolithic infrastructure, probably from a single ISV running on a mainframe with COBOL or Fortran. And over the years, they've built code around it, and they've created a spaghetti code, or I think Sarah has called it a spaghetti challenge. You can talk more about that from her other podcast. But really, as they modernize, they want to get into a situation where they can take certain applications, switch out partners, bring in best of breed choices, also have the possibility to take parts of that technology stack and move it to the edge where the end users of that application may be. So it may be better for them to move some of their work from home stuff all across the globe to help their employees. It may be, and they may be able to consolidate their core banking in a couple of data centers and things of that manner. So, and then distributed, the bank of the 1980s, 1990s, 2000s really was built on a model of bringing everything back to one or two data centers. And you get what is called a tromboning effect, where transaction or a query may have to go all the way to a metro to be processed, and it's not the quickest route, and it creates latency, and it's not optimal for the end user experience. And so now we're seeing banks wanting to distribute things. They're doing that both also for latency reasons for customer experience, but also to deal with data sovereignty as they try to operate in different countries around the world. And that's important, being able to have a technology stack that can be distributed. Modularity goes to that. And the last piece is automated. And I think we saw a ton of that occur with the COVID pandemic, where instantaneously banks realized things that required paper processes and forms to be done, whether it was loan origination or things of that kind, just you needed to be able to go to a digital format that could be automated. We're also seeing the automation occurring on the technology stack, where we will have some of our banks come in and they will automate creating network connections and cloud infrastructure on a daily basis and tear it down when they don't need it. That reduces their cost, reduces their carbon footprint. These are all things that really, when you talk about building a better bank, are core to what we are helping them achieve at Equinix.
Yeah, this is such a timely topic. I think I probably get, I'd say, 2 calls a week from a financial institution who is, you know, embarking upon or thinking about embarking upon some level of modernization. And I think really what's made it such a hot topic for now for many financial institutions is really just the speed of change that they've experienced, all the change that occurred through the pandemic, all the changes that they've seen just simply because of the pace of technology that has caused them to need to react much more quickly. And I think a lot of them are not happy with the way that maybe they have reacted when new products are launched into the marketplace, or they might be having a tough time really delivering the new customer experience that they want to be known for. And, you know, they need to keep up not just with the competitor down the street, but they also need to be able to deliver on, you know, experiences that consumers and businesses are finding in other places, whether that's, you know, in Uber and an Amazon experience, right? We like to use those as being, you know, sort of at the top of the heap. And it's something that I think financial institutions are looking to replicate. But, you know, one question that I get asked a lot, and I'd love to ask you the question, is how do financial institutions really begin this journey of modernization? Where do you even begin?
That is a great question. It's a question that we try to help banks answer, because it is a challenging thing for them to do. It's like eating an elephant. You have to do it one bite at a time. And where's the first bite going to come from? Well, I'll say that there's this pressure to modernize that all CIOs and CTOs are under right now, that maybe for a variety of those topics that I just talked about, whether it's green sustainability, making things smarter, reducing costs, et cetera. But what they're trying to balance is risk. Making any changes to their system creates some sort of risk. So the least risky thing that they can do to begin this journey, and an easy way to kind of get things started, is to begin with the plumbing in place to help that move. You think about, if you're going to build a house in a subdivision, you'd want all the utilities there first thing. You'd want the electricity, the water, the sewer, and all those things just ready. And then you can lay the foundation, and you wouldn't do that after, you wouldn't put the plumbing in after the fact. And really what that means for the bank is begin building a wide area network, position your bank so that you can move to the cloud, create these points of presence where the cloud on-ramps sit, as well as your key ecosystem partners. And we'll have a great discussion with our banks about who are your key ISVs that you're working with. Let's talk about what we know about how their customers are connected to them. And then what they can do is, once they've got that in place and they're ready to, you know, take the next step, it's very easy for them to integrate into the cloud with the ISV that they're working with, and then start moving workloads one at a time to that hybrid cloud edge as they do their modernization journey.
Awesome, Lance. What about the intersection of banking as a service? How does banking as a service fit into the concept of being a better bank?
Yes, banking as a service has been a hot topic in the last few years, and there are several ways that banking as a service can make a bank better. Really, this is a lot about rethinking the digital supply chain of how a bank builds its infrastructure. We've got a little bit of a graphic that, if you go to the article that will be on Payments Journal, that you can see this. And that graphic really demonstrates that there is a platform that a bank can create, or to white label that they can give to their partners and kind of be on the offensive of trying to get market share, or they can take advantage of best of breed choices out there that others have built. And with that, the key thing here is when they move to a banking as a service, there's an opportunity to distribute things to the edge, because all of a sudden, they've got this as a service platform that they can replicate if they want to begin moving into a new geography where they didn't previously operate, where that may have new data sovereignty regulations, and they want to make sure that they're compatible with those and meet the latency challenges. And they can also, as they go to banking as a service, they can move things into greener facilities. Like, as I mentioned, opportunity to go on the offensive, it creates new revenue opportunities. And I think one of the things we're really seeing is it creates a quicker time to market for new products, new offerings, new customers. So these are all ways that banks can be better, is by embracing the banking as a service model in their technology stack.
You know, that's such a great thing to keep in mind. You know, often when I have these conversations with financial institutions, they're thinking about trying to fix things from the past, if you will. And I think, you know, really the great way to be able to sort of reconcile the investment in modernization is to also think about all the great new things that you can do with this, right? And so what are also the new revenue opportunities that come out of this, the cost savings? And, you know, I like the concept of being able to consider utilizing these more distributed services at the edge to look at expanding into new geographic locations, which is something we haven't heard about financial institutions talking about in quite a while.
So we covered the concept of building the better bank, covered the intersection of banking as a service into that concept. Lance, what are the other banking as a service type trends that you're following that are important for you and Equinix's team?
Sure. Well, banking as a service by its very name is an as a service model, not to overstate the obvious, but we're really seeing that everywhere, both in software as well as infrastructure. And in terms of where banking as a service fits into other trends, we're seeing it being used to facilitate embedded banking. And we're seeing that as an opportunity for things that have been part of the banking application that you would get on your banking app, being able to be done inside of a non-financial service app. And that really requires a digital supply chain between the non-financial institution, the financial institution, to take advantage of that banking as a service that the bank offers. And then really, it's all part of open banking from the aspect of this is all API driven, requires connectivity, requires secure, robust, and consistent latency connections between the bank and the fintech or the third party. So these are all things we're seeing. The other thing that we're really seeing is a connection between real-time payments and banking as a service. So one of the things that are in front of CIOs and CTOs is this move in many of the countries where we operate from the batch system of ACH to real-time payments. And that's going to require new infrastructure to support that. When it's batch, if your network goes down for 15 minutes, as long as you get the file there by the cutoff window, you're fine. But in the real-time world, you have to have always-on connectivity. Now, banking as a service really allows a bank to leapfrog trying to do things bolt on real-time payments to their existing infrastructure versus taking something that somebody's already pre-built and integrated into a seamless system. So I see this as a way for banks to also adopt and use RTP, especially when if they're operating globally, being able to take advantage of somebody that can do all the nuances between the different countries' real-time payment platforms and makes it easier. So I'm curious to find out what Sarah thinks about this versus all the other trends that are going out in the marketplace.
Yeah, I think, you know, if I had to make a list of the top five trends impacting banking and payments today, somewhere in there, real-time payments and open banking are certainly two of them, right? And it's quite a quandary, I think, for a lot of financial institutions. And, you know, most of the time I'm talking to organizations here in the U.S. and, you know, they think, well, yes, you know, open banking, that's really a privacy issue, but it's not. I mean, open banking is here, whether we have mandates as they do in other countries or not. It is here and it is happening. And if you don't have a plan for it, I think you're putting a lot of your business at risk. So, you know, planning how you're going to effectively launch and integrate open banking and its enabler, real-time payments, is absolutely critical, you know, to financial institution strategies.
So Lance, how about the intersection of cloud and banking as a service? How should banks be thinking about the cloud for deploying banking as a service? You know, what are your thoughts there?
Well, banking as a service can be deployed in private cloud or in the public cloud. Both are options out there, but really what it comes down to is making it available to the end users very seamlessly and not having them need to know where that's running. And I think what I like about this question is Equinix, we don't operate a public cloud ourselves. And so we're neutral in this aspect. We become a trusted advisor kind of for advising banks that are asking this type of question. You know, how do I think about this? What should I do? And my answer would be you really just need to consider the strength of the various cloud providers. Each of them, aside from just what they charge in storage, have different strengths and weaknesses. Some of it may be the integration of back-end applications that they have that are financial services related, to having specialties in AI and ML, to having specialties in having a large developer community. And the thing I think you need to think about when moving to the cloud is where are you going to put those adjacent non-cloud applications? Because not everything can go into the cloud. When we talk to some banks, they say they have as many as 3,000 applications out there that are not cloud ready, but they want to make that leap and they've with the applications that are cloud ready. And so those applications that are cloud ready still often need to talk to those that aren't cloud ready. So it's important to have community understand how are you going to build your infrastructure so that those applications communicate as seamlessly with each other as they did when they sat side by side in computers within your own data center. So millisecond latency becomes kind of the question of what's the connectivity like to those cloud providers. The other thing I think about is when you're talking to the cloud service providers, the discussion's really about your applications and how they will run really well in their cloud. But I think you should also be thinking about where are your partners and potential customers? How are you going to make it easy to create access between the two of them for inter-cloud routing or cloud to colo based routing? Rarely are you going to have all of your customers in the same cloud that you are. And that's important because your customers need to know how they get to you. And yes, you can use the internet for some of this, but that's not always the best and most secure answer. And then you need to look at data egress costs when it comes to the cloud service providers and evaluate that on an application by application basis. Decide what is the best applications to put in the cloud, what's the best to leave out of the cloud, because some of these applications you may not want in the cloud because there's a lot of back and forth data going in and out and it becomes very costly. And then I think the last point I'd make here is just really is where do you value the control? In a multi-cloud, multi-server, or silo model, there is a whole degree of variance between how much control you're going to have over the infrastructure. Is it important to be able to point to, this is my server, it's running this application, and I want to make sure that when we're done with it, we can shred the drives on it, or are you comfortable with how the clouds operate? And that's not to take away from, I think the clouds operate in a very secure manner, but just different banks have different control requirements, and we can advise them on how we can help with all these questions I've raised about how to go to the cloud when you're deploying banking as a service.
Darren Lance, thank you so much for sharing your expertise. A great holistic conversation around bank modernization, touching on building a better bank, banking as a service, the intersection with other trends, you know, banking in the cloud. Great conversation, and thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you, Ryan and Sarah. This is the first podcast we've done together. I hope we do more together. You bring some brilliant insights into the discussion, and glad to be part of Payments Journal again.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Thank you.